Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Safe for Now by Bob Howard, narrated by Graham Halstead. 1. Simone, Southern England, the beginning. It wasn't exactly a loud noise that woke Simone Tisdall from a deep sleep. It was just loud enough to pull her from the grip of a dream to a level of awareness where she could listen for any of the telltale sounds a mother would recognize. Those sounds in the middle of the night didn't always signal that something was wrong. Sometimes it was just one of the children having a dream of their own. One or two words would escape from a sleeping child's mouth, but they were always loud enough to rouse Simone. Whether it was a dream or the start of a long day due to an illness, Simone accepted the job as hers alone while Henry was away. She wouldn't take away his dream of living in the International Space Station for a few months by letting the obligations of being a parent interfere. She lifted her head a few inches from the pillow and concentrated on the quiet house. There it was again. She could tell it wasn't coming from either of the children's rooms. It sounded like something bumped against one of the garbage cans on the back porch. It was followed by the unmistakable crash of a potted plant that had undoubtedly fallen from the railing around the patio. Simone was already at her bedroom door, pulling on a robe. The children's rooms were further down the hall from the stairs. One reason she had fallen in love with the old country house near Verwood was that the master bedroom was closer to the top of the stairs than the smaller bedrooms. She would check on the children before investigating downstairs, but she was startled, and she felt more petite than her thin 5.5 feet frame had ever felt. Her brown hair was long and straight, so she knew she didn't strike an imposing figure if there was a threat in her home. Her pretty face certainly wasn't going to scare anyone off either. She peeked into her daughter's room. Emily didn't show any sign that she had been disturbed. Simone debated for a moment whether or not to wake her, but decided to let her sleep. It was probably nothing more than an animal from the woods, or maybe a cat, but her skin crawled when she heard another potted plant fall just as she pulled Emily's door shut. She waited in the gloom outside the door in case the sound had reached Emily this time. The 6-year-old didn't call out after a few minutes, so Simone quietly moved toward the next door. Her bare feet hardly whispered on the thick carpet. Her younger child, Adam, was sitting up in bed, but Simone knew the lost expression on his face very well. He wasn't quite awake.
"Here, baby, let me help you with your blanket."
The 4-year-old blinked as she brushed the hair from his forehead and gently pressed a hand against his chest to ease him toward the pillow.
"I heard something. Is Daddy home?" "No, baby. Remember I explained that Daddy will be home soon. Now go back to sleep. We don't want to wake your sister."
Simone was grateful that this was one time when Adam did what she told him to. He let his head burrow deeply into the pillow and was asleep before she could cover him and get back to the door. Adam would likely sleep through it all and probably wouldn't remember it in the morning. She moved more quickly now. Simone went to her husband's bureau where he kept the small lockbox, but first she got the key from the jewelry chest on her bureau. She opened it and removed the Smith & Wesson her husband had insisted on buying. If he wasn't prominent in the United Kingdom space program, he might have had difficulty obtaining a permit as quickly as he had. Simone did as she had been taught. She ejected the empty magazine and racked the slide open. Next, she checked the empty chamber before reversing the process by slipping in a full magazine, then releasing the slide. She pulled the slide back one more time so it would put a bullet in the chamber. After she released it, she made sure the safety was still in the up position and wrapped her hands around the weapon with her fingers outside the trigger guard. It was all a ritual her husband taught her, so she would always know when the gun was definitely loaded and ready to shoot. She had rehearsed for this moment, and there would be no accidents. She was aware that there was a faint shudder running through her body as she silently descended the stairs. She had rehearsed it, but not in her wildest dreams had she believed she would ever need to remove the gun from its box. It had all been to appease Henry and his close friend, Adam Calloway. The American astronaut was almost a member of the family, and they had named their son after him, but she had doubted his reasoning when he explained why they needed the gun. Now she understood, but it still scared her to have the gun ready for business. At the bottom of the stairs, she stopped and listened. There was a faint breeze coming from somewhere, and the goosebumps that had popped up on her arms were partly from the realization that she had left windows open for the fresh air. She wondered if she would be standing in the darkness at the bottom of the stairs if she had thought to close the windows for security. Simone was torn between being mad at herself and glad because leaving them open had enabled her to hear what had awakened her. Her eyes had adjusted to the dark, and she was grateful that the slight glow in the east meant sunrise wasn't far away. A moment of regret slipped in because she knew she wouldn't be going back to bed, but it was pushed back by the unmistakable sound of someone or something blundering around on the back porch. This time there were no crashes from broken pottery, but the thumping of feet on wooden boards didn't sound like anything other than an animal of the two-legged variety. It was only at that moment when Simone thought about her phone or even the security cameras Henry had installed. Their spotty Wi-Fi had caused her to treat the cameras as an afterthought, but she had left her phone on the nightstand. Now she wished she could at least try to see what was out there using the phone app. The kitchen was to her left on the other side of the formal dining room, and as she peered around the corner, she focused on the door to the kitchen. From her vantage point, she could see the door to the back porch, but it was still too dark to make out details. Something moved beyond the glass, but it was little more than a shadow to Simone. She would have to get closer, and she momentarily considered retreating to her bedroom to call the police. The idea of someone getting inside because she wasn't strong enough spurred her into moving again. Keeping the gun aimed at the floor the way Henry had shown her, she moved sideways toward the kitchen door. She didn't know why she was walking sideways. It just seemed like the right thing to do, and it also seemed like she got there faster that way. One more step, and she would be able to see the back porch through the window, but she had to be careful not to give herself away. Simone drew in a deep breath to calm herself, and then took a quick look. She immediately ducked back into her hiding place. She needed a moment to understand what she had seen. She assumed it was a man because of his height, but she didn't just assume he was drunk. She knew he was, because he literally fell from view in the brief moment when she had dared to step closer to the window. He had his back to her, so she didn't see his face, and when he fell, it was down the stairs to the flagstones that marked the path through the garden. Another dash into the kitchen felt like the only way to keep him from coming back to the door, so Simone steeled her nerves and rushed into the room. This time she raised the Smith & Wesson and flipped the thumb safety downward. Following where she aimed, she went to the door and yanked it open using one hand. She was proud of herself for not shaking so hard that she would need to sit the gun down to open the door. The sun was just beginning to peek over the horizon, and she had a good view of the path. Nothing was there. The pieces from the broken flower pots littered the floorboards of the porch, and a few had obviously fallen in the other direction to the ground below. But there was something else. Keeping her eyes on the path and the gun ready to shoot, Simone lowered herself to her knees to get a closer look at the dark spot on the top step. "Is that blood?" she said, just above a whisper. When she lifted her eyes from the spot again, there was more light, and she saw another large, dark spot on a flagstone. The bushes that bordered the garden swayed, and Simone backed into the open doorway as she stood straighter. She didn't know why, but she kept the gun aimed at the bushes. That was when she made the decision to let the police deal with why there was blood on her porch. Less than 10 minutes later, Simone had locked the doors, closed the windows, drawn the curtains, and returned to her place of defense, facing the door to the porch. The gun rested on the kitchen counter next to her as she called the police, and as the phone rang, she forced herself to breathe evenly. She listened to it ring endlessly and realized she failed to calm herself with each ring because no one was answering. She hung up and immediately dialed again. It took almost an hour to finally get the local constable on the phone, and getting angry at him did no good. He apologized for the delay, but said they were quite busy and simply asked how he could help. Simone drew on every bit of the calm she had seen in her husband and told the officer what had happened. He was a bit too interested in the part about her arming herself before going outside, and her temper almost got the best of her. She stopped herself just short of insulting his genealogy and simply asked when she could expect an investigator at her home. He told her it could be later that afternoon and hung up before she could come unglued, and that was what she did. She was still beating the phone against the kitchen counter when she realized that Emily and Adam were standing at the kitchen door watching her. She discreetly slid the Smith & Wesson behind canisters of sugar and flour.
"Mummy?"
The one-word question from Emily was enough for her to get a grip on herself. Her children were standing between her and the back door, and she suddenly had a fear that something would burst through the door at any second. She moved to the other side of them and shepherded the children into the dining room.
"Let's get you some breakfast." "We aren't going to eat in the kitchen," asked Emily.
Simone felt a small flash of pride in her daughter when she realized Adam was dressed and even had matching socks.
"You helped your brother get dressed this morning. Well, you're a big girl now, so we can have breakfast in the dining room."
The truth was, Simone wanted them to be as far from the back porch as they could get, and she surprised them when she further announced they could take their breakfast upstairs to their bedrooms. It was late afternoon when the sound of tires crunched over the gravel driveway to the Tisdall home. Simone had passed the time getting dressed and then waiting in front of the television, watching the news. She didn't like what she had seen. After the previous night, her imagination was connecting dots that created a picture she didn't want to see, but she saw it anyway. Simone understood the news stories for what they were, a warning about things to come. Most of her friends and country neighbors were the type who would write off the first events as nothing more than tabloid journalism, things that they had seen in movies that didn't happen in real life, but were happening close to home. The first time she had heard of cannibalism in a major city was when a homeless man in Miami was found eating another homeless man behind a dumpster. He might have been naked, but she didn't read the whole story. It was just too violent and sensational. She had only read enough to know he was strung out on something like meth or PCP, and it had taken multiple police officers to restrain him. In the end, they had been forced to fatally shoot him. That had been years ago when there had been a spate of such stories. The fascination with television shows and movies about zombies was at a peak, and whenever it happened in real life, people asked the obvious question: could it really happen? The stories were eventually explained away and forgotten. There was something different about the new reports. Maybe it was the way they didn't get blown out of proportion. As a matter of fact, they were almost secretive about the details. An upscale private school in London had enough money to keep some of the details out of the news, but even threats of lawsuits didn't stop all of the leaks, and the public heard enough of the details for Simone to wonder if it might be real this time. Her husband was a famous astronaut, and just the kind of family the school wanted to draw into its fold. The headmaster had sent stacks of invitations to the Tisdall family, inviting them to bring the children by for a tour of the campus. Simone doubted they would be taking him up on his invitation, now that there was the cloud of a murder hanging over the school. It seemed the janitor had something in common with the homeless man in Miami. Not the drug habit, according to the scant reports, but his preference for dining on living flesh. What caught Simone's eye wasn't the gory details, but the fact that it wasn't behind a dumpster or in one of the endless cellar rooms of the school. It was in plain sight, with no attempt to disguise the crime. The short report in the news said it was between classes when the halls were crowded with students, most of whom were on their way to the dining hall. The janitor emerged from a custodial locker feeling ill, and when he stumbled into the river of students who choked the busy corridor, he fell on one young boy at random. The students pushed at the others around them in a fruitless attempt to put distance between themselves and the warm arterial spray. The brutality of the attack was perhaps what made it appear unbelievable. The fact that it was an isolated incident was what kept it from becoming the warning sign the public needed. If the police had been quick to inform the media of their discovery of the janitor's mother, a few more people would have become as wary as Simone Tisdall. But the connection was slow in coming. Apparently, she and her son were both victims of the same infected person. The partially consumed remains of the mother were strewn around her house, undiscovered for almost 2 days after the attack at the school. Fear and panic would come much later, when it was too late. The sound of the police car was a welcome interruption to the news broadcasts, and she greeted the officer outside the front door of the house.
"What was it? Heavy traffic?" she asked sarcastically.
The first officer who got out of the vehicle caught the brunt of her anger. He was young, maybe no more than 25 years old. There was a slightly older female officer getting out of the car from the driver's side. Both kept neutral expressions on their faces, perhaps because they understood Simone's frustration.
"Good afternoon, Mrs. Tisdall," said the young male officer.
She barely heard him because he spoke softly and was obviously ready to be attacked. He had his hat in his hands and nervously rotated it by its brim. The female officer came to his defense.
"Mrs. Tisdall, I can assure you that you would understand our delay if you had seen the cause for yourself."
Simone opened her mouth to renew her verbal assault, but she noticed the female officer had a new bandage on her right arm that extended from below the cuff of her shirt. It had a reddish tint that reminded her of what she had seen on the porch. She let out an exasperated sigh and said,
"Well, you're here now, so we might as well take a walk out back."
The pool of blood that stained the boards had turned black in the hours since she had first examined it. The weather was a bit cool, but there were still flies walking around on it. They swirled away when the trio approached from the garden.
"There was a man," said Simone. "He was on the porch and then went that way toward the woods."
She gestured toward the trees that bordered an area of nationally protected forest.
"Can you describe him?"
asked the female officer. She pulled out a notepad and pen.
"Was he possibly injured and just seeking assistance?" "I didn't see his face. He had his back to the window when I saw him, but he was either injured or drunk."
She pointed toward the bloodstain.
"My guess would be injured. Should I have helped him?"
The two officers appeared uncomfortable by her question and shared an unspoken exchange with their eyes. Simone sensed that this was a moment they had prepared for during their drive to her home. The male officer once again deferred to the female with a glance in her direction.
"Mrs. Tisdall, you did the right thing. We are only at liberty to tell you there were other calls to the police last night before yours, which is why we were delayed in our response to your call. Not all of them went well."
"What does that mean?"
Simone was suddenly more frightened than she had been.
"You said you didn't see his face. Is that a security camera above your door?"
asked the young male officer. He had been busy studying the bloodstain and smaller black spots on the garden flagstones, but seemed to be taking in every detail of the scene. Simone was a bit embarrassed because she had forgotten to check the camera. Her husband was an astronaut, and she had ignored the simplest of technology he had installed.
"Oh, I'm so sorry, officer. Yes, and I had totally forgotten to check it. My husband made sure it would record all the time because some cameras don't get everything if they depend on movement. It automatically erases everything about every 4 or 5 days, so it would all still be there."
"Can we see it?" he asked.
Simone led them up the steps and to the back door of the kitchen.
They stepped over the dried blood and broken pottery, and she noticed the female officer was glancing in the direction of the bushes that had moved the night before.
"Did you see something?"
"I don't know," said the officer.
But for the first time since they had arrived, Simone noticed something she had seldom seen before. The officers were wearing sidearms, and they had both moved their right hands to rest them on the grips of their weapons.
"Mummy, what's happening?"
Emily had appeared in the doorway just as the two officers made a move toward the back of the garden. Simone quickly crossed the porch and gathered Emily into her arms.
"Back inside, Emily. Where's your brother?"
Simone suddenly got a bad feeling about Adam.
"He's looking at the police car," said Emily.
It didn't take much to get Simone into motion, but this time she moved even faster than she knew she could. Something felt terribly wrong, and the officers felt it too. The young male officer seemed undecided about which way to go, and at the last second, he chose to follow Simone. When they crossed the dining room, they could see the front door at the foot of the stairs was standing open, and they didn't see Adam until they could also see beyond the gravel driveway. There were people on the other side of the police car, and they appeared to be injured. Adam was standing at the top of the brick steps on the front porch, watching as the people walked awkwardly toward the house.
"Stay back!"
yelled the young male officer as he passed Adam and took up a protective stance between Adam and the closest of the strangers. His hand had gone to the gun again, but this time he drew it and took aim. His target was a man who was probably in his early 50s, and the man was already in need of medical attention. He walked forward with a heavy limp and didn't heed the warning to stay back.
"I said stay back,"
warned the officer for a second time. Simone watched in disbelief as the officer brought his weapon down and shoved it back into the holster. The man was so close to the bottom of the steps, close to the officer, close to her son. She didn't even remember picking up the gun she had put behind the canisters earlier, but she had done it when she ran through the kitchen on her way to the front door. It felt heavier than before, but she found herself automatically going through the ritual Henry had her practice over and over. She verified that it was loaded and that there was a bullet in the chamber. She flipped the safety downward and brought the gun to eye level. The officer had taken a step forward to intercept the strange man as he stumbled toward Adam. Simone was aware that she was aiming a gun over her son's head, but she had practiced enough to know the recoil would pull the barrel upward. She was ready to take the shot until the officer moved squarely into her sights. For a third time, he told the man to stay back, but this time he reached out and put his hand on the man's chest and pushed. He was surprised by how easily he could push the man away, but the second surprise was that the man grabbed the officer's forearm with both hands. The officer was pulled forward as the man fell backward, and because there was a gentle slope where the steps met with the gravel driveway, the officer was unable to stop himself from falling on top of the man. That was when the screaming began, and gunshots. From somewhere behind the house, there were three shots. Simone had forgotten that the female officer had been drawn toward the bushes, and she was sure the shots had come from there. Emily screamed for her mother and ran from the dining room out to where Simone was trying to reacquire her target. She slammed into Simone's hip, making her pull the trigger. The blast from the muzzle of the 9mm gun was deafening, and all Simone could think was, "Where did the bullet go?" Adam was on the ground now, and Simone saw that he was only inches from where the officer lay face down on top of the injured man. Blood was everywhere, but it seemed like most of it was across her son's back. Simone was torn between pulling herself free from Emily or taking her daughter with her. Emily didn't understand what had happened until she saw Adam lying prone at the bottom of the steps, but she couldn't stop herself from grasping at her mother for protection. The screaming had never stopped. It had only been drowned out by the deafening crack of the Smith & Wesson, but as the ringing in her ears subsided, Simone understood that it was the police officer who was screaming. Anyone who has ever been bitten by an animal knows that the action is terribly invasive. The victim of a bite has to wrap his mind around the pain, as well as the amount of blood that erupts from the wound. The invasion is compounded when the bite continues. In this case, the strange man had his teeth sunk deeply into the wrist of the officer, and he was pulling his head backward in an attempt to tear away a mouthful of his arm. Adam lifted his face from the gravel even as more blood flew from the melee that was happening only inches away. He was sprayed again, and he cried out for his mother. Simone dropped her gun, and in a combination of crawling and falling down the porch steps, she dragged Emily to where Adam had pushed himself up onto his elbows. She didn't even notice when she skinned her knees on the edges of the bricks. She kept Emily under her right arm, away from where the officer fought to free himself from the other man, and with her left arm, she scooped up her son. In a blur, Simone was on her feet and running with a child on each hip. When she was far enough away, she was able to stop. Emily allowed her mother to let go of her long enough for them both to tend to Adam. He was crying uncontrollably as Simone spun him around to the left and the right, running her hands over the places where she saw the most blood. With relief, she discovered that she hadn't shot him, and the blood wasn't his. It was like coming out of a thick fog. Her skinned and bloody children stood beside her as she knelt on the sharp gravel. The screaming had been replaced by a mewing sound that came from the lips of the police officer. He was on his back now, and the other man knelt over him. He was still burying his face into the officer's forearm. The officer seemed to be watching the man, even as the crazed stranger sat back on his heels and chewed. His body had gone into shock, and he was fading fast. More gunshots rang out from nearby, and the man fell away from the officer. Simone didn't know how she did it, but she somehow forced herself to move again. Maybe it was the sharp interruption of the gunshots, but as she scooped her children up for a second time and ran back to the steps, the female officer ran past her toward her partner. Simone had dropped her gun at the top of the front porch steps, and she put Adam down just long enough to pick it up. Maybe it was because she knew it was what Henry would do, or maybe it was because something was so different about the attacker and there were more of them coming, but something inside of her took control. Simone stepped inside the house and put the children down at the bottom of the stairs to the second floor. She put her face in front of Emily's.
Take your brother to Mummy and Daddy's room. Lock the door when you get there. Don't open the door until I come back for you.
Emily opened her mouth to protest, but Simone put a finger across her lips.
Your father would want you to be a big girl right now, and I need for you to protect your brother. He's scared.
She only watched for a moment as Emily straightened her shoulders and took her little brother's hand. She led him up the stairs to the second floor, but Simone knew she didn't have time to waste watching them reach the top. She turned back to the open door at the front of the house and rushed outside to help the female officer. Nothing that had happened from the time she had been awakened during the night to the moment she rushed outside had been what she expected, but if she could mark a moment in time when everything made the least amount of sense, it would be when she rejoined the battle. There were at least six people in the field on the far side of the driveway, and they were struggling through the tall grass as they walked toward the house. A fence at the edge of the property would slow down their arrival, but judging by their difficulty just walking, Simone wondered if they could climb over the low fence. Her question was answered when she saw another man flip over the wire when he walked into it as if it wasn't even there. Next was her car with the police vehicle parked close behind it, and there was a woman who appeared to be unable to find her way around them. She was wedged between them, and the harder she tried to get through the gap, the more entrapped she became. Most confusing of all was the scene where the female officer had gone to the aid of her partner. She knelt at his side and appeared to be doing chest compressions to save his life. At least that was what Simone thought the woman was doing. It took a minute to understand that she did have her hands on his chest, but that he was holding them there while she was attempting to free herself from his grip. The man who had bitten the male officer was on all fours, facing away from Simone, but he was laboriously pushing himself to a standing position as he turned toward the officers on his left. Simone had seen the way he had torn into the flesh of the male officer, and she had seen the female officer converge on him as she put at least 3 bullets into him. He shouldn't be getting up, was all she could think, but Simone made a mental note that she didn't need...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?